It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow with you. John Schmelk will be joining me a little bit later on, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. So glad you could wake up early with us here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter, and you can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, as we will be getting to your calls momentarily. We'll be more than happy to break down the Chargers game as well as looking ahead to the Seahawks contest as well, as the Giants are going to try to bounce back as they return to MetLife Stadium because they fell to the Chargers 37-14 this past weekend. And as everyone knows, they are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So the focus does go towards Seattle, but it also starts to shift gears towards the offseason and what the Giants are going to do in terms of personnel, in terms of scheme, in terms of strategy, and so forth. And John and I began to speculate a little on Monday following our recap of the Chargers game because they're going to have a lot of free agents, and clearly they have a number of issues that they need to address. This has been a relatively down year for Eli Manning, and maybe that is kind the way I'm putting it because his numbers are clearly off the board compared to where they were in previous seasons. So that is an area that they're going to have to improve. And it's funny because somebody threw out a suggestion on Twitter the other day, and I believe it was our good friend Saraceno, about whether or not the Giants should consider actually benching Eli Manning the rest of the season to give Ryan Nassib an opportunity to develop as a quarterback. And my answer is absolutely not. You know, Eli Manning has not been himself for the majority of this season. So you need to use at least the last three games for him to have an opportunity to get back on track and get this offense going. You want to take something into the offseason that leads you to believe that this offense can get back to what it used to do. And that is relying on a big play here or there and also having consistency on the offensive line with the running game. I think the running game has come a long way this season. It went from the bottom of the charts to the middle of the pack, and you had a flash here or there, for example, against the Cowboys when they ran over 200 yards, and they had a stretch where, you know, they were picking up triple digits on the ground, and Andre Brown was probably the biggest reason why they were able to turn things around, because once he returned for that game against Oakland, you know, things started looking up. But since then, you know, it really hasn't been a juggernaut, hasn't been a powerhouse running game, and that is something that, you know, the Giants have been known for, not necessarily the last few seasons, but back in the day. And when I say back in the day, I'm not talking about the 1960s or the 1970s. It happened within this decade where the Giants were able to dictate the tempo on the ground. Remember, they had the three-headed monster. That wasn't too long ago. So they have had success on the ground, whether it be Ahmad Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, Derek Ward, you name it. They have the ability to do that, especially with the personnel that they have on this team. But when you take into consideration the injuries and the offensive line, once again, and I say this week in and week out, it really doesn't matter who you have in the backfield. If you're not blocking for anybody, you're going to be hard-pressed to find the ability to find some holes and be able to get the running game going. And I think that's the issue that the Giants have run into this season. You know, six different offensive line alignments. And the Chargers, a team that they just went up against this weekend, had 16 different alignments, which is tremendous. The fact that they were able to only surrender 22 sacks this season, so they were able to overcome some of those issues. But that's a very rare occurrence where a team that has to deal with so many injuries and so much movement is able to still perform at a very high level. 90% of the time, if you have multiple injuries to the offensive line, and I'm not just talking about one guy going down week in and week out. I'm talking about your guards getting hurt, your tackles getting hurt, your centers getting hurt. It's very hard to build consistency with respect to pass protection and the running game. And that's probably the biggest issue for the Giants this season. And as a result, Eli Manning has struggled. As a result, the running game hasn't been, you know, an area where other teams are fearing you. So it starts and ends, as far as I'm concerned, on the offensive line. Eli Manning's decision-making is certainly a contributing factor, and sometimes the decision-making of the running backs and not picking the right hole certainly plays a role. But if you really want to sum up this season and understand why the Giants' offense has struggled so much, you got to point to the offensive line. Eli Manning has never seen this much pressure before since he put on a Giants uniform. He's been sacked over 30 times. That's a career high. And that's not even including all the quarterback hurries and everything else. So he's had a lot of pressure in his face. And remember, if you don't have running backs and tight ends that are not picking up the slack, that's another contributing factor as to why they haven't been able to slow down the opposing pass rush. Because you don't have a tight end that's been a presence this season, that has been able to balance out the offensive line and pick up the additional rushes, as well as the running backs. You go back to that game against Washington, which was 2 weeks ago, and Will Beatty struggled immensely, but Andre Brown was caught out of position time and time again. The communication was off. So it's not just the offensive line. There's a lot of other layers to why the Giants have not been able to protect Eli Manning very well. But this San Diego game, with all that being said, was probably the one main example. And there's been examples at times, but I'm talking about all four quarters where Eli Manning's efficiency was off. And part of it in previous games was because he was constantly getting pressure in his face. This was one game where, yes, he was getting pressure in his face, but even at times where he wasn't getting pressure in his face, his throws were off. And that's why you need these last three games not to develop Ryan Nassib. I'm sorry. Ryan Nassib is not going to be under center at the start of next season. Eli Manning will be. So you've got to use this time wisely. Yes, you're mathematically out of it. You don't have a shot at the playoffs, but this is still valuable time to start to develop players and even develop your veterans to some degree, because the veterans have not necessarily been performing at a very high level. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's open up the lines. You can also chime in on social media. Hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We will be getting to the Seahawks a little bit later on in the program, but let's take your phone calls. We go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Not a problem, Drew. What you got?
Hey, you know, first of all, you know, let me just say this real quick, then I'm gonna leave it alone, man. Steve, just tell him he could go back to Friday's tapes and listen to them, but I never questioned his sexuality nor his or mentioned him with Ann. And I listened to the tapes again yesterday, because I listened to the show yesterday as well anyway. At any rate, leaving that alone and moving right along. You're talking about Eli. And, you know, first, I agree with everything you said. We don't need to bench Eli. And, you know that I'm a huge Eli fan, and I will be the first one to say Eli has been atrocious this year. And that's also being kind. I mean, his decision making is just way off, and you wonder what in the world is going on. That said, I think a lot of our fans are forgetting who Eli Manning is, and I'm talking about from this standpoint. Okay, Eli is not he's not RG3 or Kaepernick or even Romo in terms of being a mobile quarterback. Eli is not a mobile quarterback. He never has been a mobile quarterback. Okay. You know, he's a quarterback that matter of fact, we sit there and we laugh at some of the runs he does attempt to make. You know, he's a quarterback that's going to sit in the pocket and everything. That said, you know, we needed to figure out what it is we want to do, because we know what type of quarterback Eli is. That means we need to build an offensive line behind him. As you said, he has never faced the type of pressure that he is facing now. And, you know, it's quite evident that Eli, you know, is one of these quarterbacks. He doesn't want to get hit. He doesn't want to take a lot of sacks. So, yeah, his decision-making is off. You know, I would say right now, you know, everybody's talking about how great Brady's year is going and everything. But I would say this again. You put Brady behind this offensive line, his numbers are not going to be where they are now. you put Peyton Manning behind this offensive line, his numbers are not going to be where they are now. So, yes, it is the offensive line that is affecting the play of Eli Manning, okay? And the bottom line is we do not have a quarterback that is mobile that's going to run around and escape the pocket like a Romo, like a RG3 or Kaepernick or any of those guys. We have a quarterback who's stiff, who doesn't run. He's not a mobile quarterback. And, yeah, when the offensive line breaks down, there's going to be problems. So that's what it is. Yes, Eli has been horrendous. But, again, you know, we're not talking about a mobile quarterback here. And we knew that going in when we picked him. We've seen that since he's been here. So, you know, that to me, that's the biggest issue. And I said it once before, and I said it again. We need, in the offseason, we have to develop an offensive line, and we need a tight end. We need, like it's been mentioned, we need a franchise tight end. That's all I have to say on that, man. So can I get your, you know, opinion on that, sir?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny, Drew, because you threw out the fact that Eli Manning is not a mobile quarterback, and that clearly goes without saying. And all I hear left and right on social media and even on this show, well, Aaron Rodgers has played behind the bad offensive line for the majority of his career, yet he always seems to overcome some of those issues. But you hit it right on the nose, Drew. Aaron Rodgers is the most mobile quarterback in the NFL. So he can get around those O-line issues, whereas Eli Manning, you're talking about a guy that, like you said, he likes to stay in the pocket. So you put Tom Brady, you put Drew Brees, you put these other pocket passers behind the Giants' offensive line, they're not even going to be able to overcome some of these issues.
Exactly, and that's my point, you know, and I think that's the point that fans are missing out on that issue. Yes, Eli is horrendous. There's no doubt about that, okay? But again, you know, as you noted, okay, time and time again, the offensive line, this is one of the worst offensive lines I've seen in a while, okay? And you know, somebody else mentioned it. Yes, I think it was Victor mentioned it, how Eli and his brother, you know, they avoid the big hits. They try to stay healthy and everything. Yeah, there's a reason for that. These guys don't like to get hit, so they want to get rid of the ball. You know, I mean, you know, look at the number of intentional grounding penalties Eli has picked up. Yeah, these guys don't like to get hit, so they're going to get rid of the ball. That's the biggest issue right there that I see is we don't have the offensive line. Eli feels a little bit of pressure. He's going to make some bad decisions, some dumb decisions in some respects, okay? A little bit of that, to me, Eli's going to have to probably man up a little bit on that. But the biggest issue is, again, the offensive line is just horrendous. They can't block. And Will Beattie is just pure D garbage. So that's all I got, man, on that, dude. So,
all right, Drew.
I mean, I appreciate it.
You got
appreciate
it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And listen, pass protection has been a very troubling aspect this season. I think that we've hammered that home week in and week out. You know, Drew just brought up Will Beattie. He's another player that you could throw in the mix of players that have had a disappointing campaign, and Beattie will be the first guy to admit that. The Carolina game is probably one game that you could turn to, as well as that Washington game. I think he performed better against San Diego, but then James Brewer struggled. So, you know, if one guy improves, then the other guy falls off. The left side of the line has been more troubling than the right side, and I alluded to this the other day. The right side, ever since Snee went down, you've had at least some stability on that side because Deal and Pugh have been playing together consistently. Whereas on the left side, remember, you've had a lot of movement. You went from Booth and Beattie with Cordell for a good stretch. Then Cordell goes down with the knee injury, so now you take Booth out of the guard spot, you move him to the center spot, you insert Brewer. Now Beattie, who's been so used to playing next to Booth, has to get acclimated to playing next to Brewer. It's very easy to describe it. It's very easy to say that. But it's a whole other thing when you look at the execution level. And that's been the big issue for the Giants. You've been playing a game of musical chairs on the O-line. Very hard to maintain stability with respect to that. And it's funny because the Seahawks, the team that they're going up against this weekend, Seattle's also had to play some musical chairs with its offensive line. Russell Okung, one of their best offensive linemen, he was in and out of the lineup. Max Unger, their center. They've had a lot of injuries. Hasn't necessarily hurt their running game, but part of that is because of the offense they run. And Drew brought up Peyton Manning, Eli's brother. And Peyton Manning's running a completely different offense than the Giants are showcasing. Denver's offense is just like San Diego's offense, which Giants fans got to see on full display Sunday. How quickly was Phillip Rivers getting rid of the football? Why do you think the Chargers were 10 for 15 on third down? Very manageable third downs. Of those 15 third downs, 10 of them were for 5 yards or less. They get rid of the football, they run the football on first and second down, and they do not put themselves in very precarious situations. The longest third down, if memory serves me right, was a third and 12, and believe it or not, they actually executed that because they got a 15-yard pass to Antonio Gates. Now, part of that was the Giants' defense, but also part of that was that is what San Diego's offense does so effectively. Phillip Rivers is not holding on to the football. He's not looking for the deep bomb. And Manning has been looking for that throughout the course of the season. It didn't happen until the middle of the year, where it's almost as if they looked at themselves in the mirror and they said, you know what, we can't rely on that anymore. Victor Cruz is being double-teamed. Akeem Nicks is not getting separation. And Reuben Randall has been good, but clearly he needs other receivers to take attention away for him to be a true playmaker. And to add on top of that, Brandon Myers hasn't established himself until recently. So what do we need to do? We need to then step back and we need to evolve as an offense. And that's what's happened over the course of this season. Normally you do that work during the offseason. You don't use that in week 5, week 6, week 7 and say, okay, we've got to go back to the drawing board. You maybe do that a little bit during the bye week, which they did, because the change occurred more so after the bye week. But you don't want to start tinkering and tweaking with your personnel and your strategy, because there's only so much time you have on your hands when you've already got to focus on your next upcoming opponent. So this offseason, as we laid out on Monday and Drew echoed those sentiments, this is a transformative offseason is what I'm going to call it. It's not a rebuilding offseason. But they've got to all of a sudden say to themselves, what is the identity of our team? Also, what is the identity even on defense? Keep that in mind. It doesn't just go for offense, because this is a defense that's been built on the pass rush. Pass rush was non-present the first few weeks of the season. It's gotten better over the last few weeks. Prior to the Chargers game, they had 17 sacks over a very short period of time. And Justin Tuck was a big reason why. But JPP's been relatively quiet. Mathias Kiwanuka's been relatively quiet. Cullen Jenkins, I think, was one of the best offseason additions they made. He's been great against the run, great at getting at the quarterback. Guys like Patterson, they've made their presence felt, but you're going to have some free agents. So the nucleus is not necessarily going to be intact next season. But the guys they bring in, the guys they bring back, you've got to have a game plan and say, this is what we want to do as a defense. We want to get to the quarterback. We want to be stingy against the run. Okay, well, let's make sure that we've got the right personnel in place that also can fully digest Perry Fuel's system. On offense, we want to be a run-first team, and we want to rely on short passes. We don't want to necessarily go for the home run. Okay, well, you need to bring in a wide receiver that's going to get good separation off a slant, for example, or good separation off a curl, those type of routes, so you can come back to your quarterback and get 5 to 10 yard gains. So these are the type of decisions and questions that are going to have to be asked and answered over the next few weeks leading into the offseason. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Medow on Twitter. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We go to Daniel in Pennsylvania. Daniel, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hi, thank you for receiving my call.
You got it. What you got, Daniel?
I'm really concerned about what's going on, what's going to happen in the future for the Giants, what's going to happen in the future for Eli. I mean, I see that the kid has a lot of potential, but the offense, the defense, is just not working right. You know what I mean?
Well, the defense started off slow. They had rough performances against Denver, Carolina, and Kansas City. It improved, and part of that is probably the level of the opponents they went up against. The bottom line is they need this pass rush to get going. That's what they need, Daniel. When the pass rush gets going and they're constantly in the quarterback's face, it covers up some of the other issues on the backside. And I'm not saying they had major issues on the backside, but they dealt with a lot of injuries to the secondary. You know, they haven't had the same cluster of guys consistently through 5 or 6 games this season. Jaron Hosley, he's been in and out of the lineup. Terrell Thomas, they've had to manage his knee. You know, outside of Prince, he's probably been the one guy that's been in the lineup consistently. Even Tremaine McBride, who has flourished given the additional playing time, has been in and out. So part of it is injury. Part of it is the lack of the pass rush. You know, those are the two things to me that jump off the page as to why this defense has had performances where they've completely shut down the opposition and then had performances like we've seen against San Diego, like we've seen in the fourth quarter against Dallas.
Yeah, you're right. And, well, for all my beliefs, I think that we should, like, you know, work on that, and probably next year be better, you know, get to the Super Bowl. Be like we used to be in 2008 when we won the Super Bowl.
Well, I think that's always the goal, and appreciate the phone call, Daniel. Thanks so much. But here's the other thing, and it's interesting that Daniel used the term, we've got to get back to the Super Bowl, when talking about his team. If you look at the last few seasons for the Giants, and I know a number of you have brought this up in shows past, in years past, the team's really been home run or miss. I mean, that's really been the, not necessarily the philosophy of the organization, but the results that this team has yielded. They either haven't made the playoffs or they've gone to the Super Bowl. It really hasn't fallen in the middle where, okay, they have a 10-6 record, they're very good, they get into the playoffs, and, you know, at least maybe they get to the second round of the playoffs. No, it's been basically we're toying around 500, we're getting hot at the right time, surge into the playoffs, go all the way to the Super Bowl, or slow down in the second half of the season and lose on a tiebreaker or miss out. Now, that really has been the results recently. If you look at what has transpired, it hasn't been a stretch where they've been 12-4 every single year. They lock up the number one seed. They get home field advantage, and they're doing damage. That has not necessarily been the case. So before you start saying, all right, let's go for the Super Bowl, and that goes without saying. That's always the goal. Well, why do you play the regular season? You got eyes on the hardware. But they've got to get to a more consistent factor where you say to yourself, okay, we've got the talent that stays healthy. We've got the scheme in place where, you know, each and every season we're not dangling around 500 and just hoping that the cards fall into place. This is a very off year for the NFC East. You cannot assume this is going to happen time and time again. The Cowboys, a very bad performance against the Bears on Monday Night Football. And that defense, wow. I mean, don't even get me started with that defense. Denver Broncos went up against the Cowboys, if you recall, early this season. Denver did not have to punt. Well, what do you think the Bears did last night? They didn't have to punt. It took them to the kneel down to end the game for you to finally look at a Chicago possession which didn't wind up with either 3 or 7 points. That's how bad the Dallas defense performed. And it's funny because somebody wrote on Twitter, Gus at Parman 62, watching the Bears tear up the Cowboys' defense last night makes you realize how bad our offense is playing regarding the Giants. Giants were able to put up some points against that Dallas defense. It wasn't as if they struggled immensely, but it does go to show you that there have been defenses that have been really bad that the Giants have gone up against, and the Giants have struggled to put up points. Not necessarily Dallas, but Washington, Green Bay, Oakland, Philadelphia, all that whole winning streak. You know, they were winning primarily with defense and maybe getting some decent field position, but they weren't necessarily winning because their offense became a juggernaut overnight. So that has been the biggest troubling factor for the Giants. And I was joking before we went on the air with some of my colleagues that, well, listen, if the logic has been the Giants have gone up against bottom-of-the-barrel defenses, they've struggled immensely. Now you get the number one overall defense in the league this week, perhaps, you know, like the Giants have done in the past, which is when they'll surprise you when you least expect it. Who knows? Maybe the offense breaks out against one of the top defenses. I know it's a stretch. I know it may be ridiculous, but it's hard to really psychologically understand what this Giants offense has been going through and why they've been struggling so much against defenses that you look on paper, they should be licking their chops and saying, hey, we are going to explode and we are going to light this team up. Hasn't happened. San Diego, one of the worst defenses in the league. There were people within the Chargers organization, and we had it on our Giants pre-broadcast, where they came out and they said, this Chargers secondary is probably the worst they've ever seen. Did the Giants showcase that? Did the Giants take advantage of that? Very hard to believe that they couldn't do that. 201-939-4513. Back to the lines, our good friend Roby in Bayshore, New York. Roby, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance. How you doing?
Doing well, Roby. What you got?
I agree with you. Like I was saying yesterday before my phone got cut off, is, you know, it's just consistency. I want to see a team that's going to, from this point on, you know, next year on, you know, start to be that 11-2 team, you know, the 12-14, you know, because I haven't seen that at all. And, you know, I mean, Drew was mentioning earlier that, you know, about the offensive line, you put You put Tom Brady in an offensive scheme, he would struggle too because he's not a mobile quarterback. But at the same time, the difference between Tom Brady and Eli Manning, Tom Brady has a bad offensive line. He also does too, but he's just throwing the quick passes, short passes. He's just taking what the defense is giving him. He's not always going for the deep ball. And just like you said earlier, Lance, Eli Manning is so concerned about throwing the deep ball. It's like he forgets to, all right, let's get a man 5 yards here, 5 yards there, 10 yards there. And what I want to see this offseason, I want to start seeing a nice screen, because we've never had a good screen play before. And I would like to see the Giants, touch on that and become that type of team. Instead of throwing the deep ball, take what the defense is giving you. Look at Josh McCown yesterday. Josh McCown looked like a freaking elite quarterback. He was just dumping pass, short passes here, deep passes there when he needed to, you know. And I just want to see the Giants do that. And I want to see Adrian, Robinson get on the field for the last three games. I want to see what this guy got. From what I'm hearing, he's healthy. So in order for us to know what we're going to have for us, a tight end next year, I want to see Robinson can do. And I want to see what Dimitri Moore can do as well. And my question to you, Lance, free agency. Are we able to sign two offensive linemen next year?
Well, I mean, depending on the numbers, I think that's reasonable. They are going to have quite amount of financial flexibility, so that is probably going to be their target. Maybe one signing, one via the draft, is a little bit more reasonable, considering you have other positions that you may want to delve into the free agent market. But two offensive linemen, if the money works out, I think they can fit that within the budget, yeah.
Right, and you agree, right? Eli Manning has to start changing his philosophies, not always the deep balls. I mean, Peyton Manning this year, most of his games also too, it wasn't always the deep passes. It's always the short passes here and there, and move the ball, keep the defense honest, move them there, you know, because the defense is expecting guys like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady to throw the deep ball. And they rarely do that. They just throw the short passes. Eli Manning has to start changing that. And, moving forward, I like our running backs. Hopefully our running backs could be healthy. You know, the defense, we'll see what – I know Stevie Brown is a free agent. It's going to be tough, because Antoine Roll is a free agent, and I don't know what's going to happen with that. But I would like to see all three of those safeties come back. Beeson, he solidified the defense. I'd like to see Tuck back. And, I want to see JPP work hard this offseason, work his butt off and get back to how he was in 2011. That's all that I have.
All right, Rudy. Thanks so much. Appreciate you weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Just a correction to what Roldy said. Antro Roll is not a free agent. He's still on the books next season. He's not going to become a free agent until 2015. But Roldy was right about Stevie Brown. That they're going to have to make a decision about. And I don't know how much interest he's going to get, considering he missed this entire season with a torn ACL. So I would think that if he shows some progress, and remember, the Giants organization has proven in the past that they will invest in a guy coming off an injury. Terrell Thomas, probably the perfect example. And Thomas, is not a guy that just came off of one knee surgery. He had multiple knee surgeries, and it turned out to be a good investment where they took a chance. He was healthy. They had to manage the knee, but he's been one of the positives in the secondary, and that's a player that I think they'll also look to bring back, assuming that his knee holds up. Stevie Brown, if he can get back in the mix. Antro Rolls played very well. Will Hill has flourished. John Beeson, I'm sure he's going to get a great deal of interest outside the Giants organization, but he's proven that he belongs within the mix here because he has helped increase the production of that linebacking core. And Roldy mentioned Justin Tuck, and I would think that Justin Tuck would come back too because he's proven that he has a little bit more gas in the tank. But, maybe they're going to have to toy with the idea of either bringing in another pass rusher or increasing the opportunities for a guy like Jenkins, depending on how they line up the guys on the defensive front seven, because they may have to lose a guy or two depending on how free agency plays out. Remember, Linval Joseph is going to be a free agent, and I'm not sure if they're going to have the finances to be able to bring him back. So if he leaves, you're going to have to move around some defensive tackles. The benefit of a guy like Jenkins is at least he can play inside and he can play outside. But you want to get these guys lined up so that you can put the guys on the edge who are the most effective. And you would think on paper, with all of the guys that they lined up this season, you know, why didn't the pass rush get to the level where it had been a few seasons ago? And, you know, part of it was, I think, the health of JPP. Clearly, he has never been 100% between the back issue, between the shoulder issue. So, you know, this is going to be an offseason that's going to be important for him in terms of development. You know, not necessarily in just getting healthy. And we talk about this with respect to Robert Griffin III. When you're a young player, and JPP is still a very young player, he did not play a great deal of football during the course of his career. And I'm not talking about the NFL. I'm talking about even before he got to the NFL. Barely played in high school. So he's still very early in his developmental stages. Therefore, you need these off seasons. And I just touched on Robert Griffin III. Why do you think he struggled? Yes, part of it is because of the Redskins' struggles, but part of it is because he missed key time in his development. You can't overlook that. Whether it be a quarterback, whether it be a defensive lineman, running back, you name it. Everybody needs time to step back, see what they're doing right, see what they're doing wrong, and develop themselves as players. And that did not happen this offseason because JPP was recovering from back surgery. Now he's recovering from shoulder issues. So they're going to have to get him back on track as well as some other players. That's going to be the key moving forward. One other thing I wanted to touch on, piggybacking off of Roldy's point before we get back to the lines, and 201-939-4513 is the telephone number for you to have an opportunity to chime in. Roldy threw out Tom Brady, even though he's played behind a shaky offensive line, and they've lost veterans over the year, he's been able to still perform at a relatively high level. And I think New England is a good example of an offense that was able to transform over the course of a year, which, once again, is a rare occurrence. You don't see that happening too often. And part of it is the reflection of Bill Belichick and what that organization has done over the course of the last few years, where they have personnel that's like a revolving door. They come in, they come out, and they still maintain a level of excellence. Brady, if you recall, early this season was working with young wide receivers. And I remember that Jets game on Thursday Night Football. He was throwing to Tompkins. He was throwing to Dobson. And these throws were off the mark. He was getting frustrated. He was getting animated. Now you turn the clock forward a few weeks, those guys are like seasoned veterans. And they have a plethora of running backs. And they have dealt with injuries, and they just find a way to plug in another guy. Bolden goes down, Vereen comes back. Vereen went down, Bolden came in. Ridley had his mishaps, fine. They'll deactivate Ridley, and they'll have more than enough confidence in a guy like LeGarrette Blount carrying the load. Very rare to see that across the NFL landscape. But they've gotten good development out of their young receivers in season. And that doesn't always happen. Normally, you need one season for them to get their legs under them and understand the routes, and then all of a sudden they break out in year two, year three. These guys, I'm not saying they're putting up monster numbers, but they're doing enough to force defenses to pay attention to them. And they lose Amendola, remember? So Julian Edelman, who is primarily a special teams guy, slides in, picks up the slack. Now's the next test. Gronkowski goes down. Who's going to be the next guy to plug in? You don't have Aaron Hernandez anymore. This is going to be a true test to the Patriots organization. They have answered the call week in and week out, but here's the next obstacle. You have confidence in New England because they've proven it before. The Giants, for some reason, guys go down, just takes the life out of this offense. And it didn't happen until Andre Brown returned where, okay, you saw some signs of life with the running game. Jim Cordell stabilized the center spot, so the offensive line improved during a stretch. Cordell goes down, what happens? Gotta mix and match. Bring in guys that don't have a lot of experience. Let's head back to the lines. We go to our good friend Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Lance.
Good morning,
wow,
to you, Len.
All I can say is what a disaster. I mean, this is just stunning, incomprehensible, and I'm not just talking about the one game. You know, everything gets put in perspective when you start looking at how the teams you played do against other teams like Dallas last night and the Redskins in their game on Sunday after they played us. I mean, you look at the wins that we had. Think about it, and I may be wrong on this, Lance, so you can correct me. Please do. The quarterbacks we faced never got on the field again. I mean, Freeman never got on the field again.
Correct.
Pryor never got on the field again. Maybe Tolzien started one more game, but they very quickly, they got Flynn off the street.
They pulled Tolzien in that game. Yeah, the next game that the Packers played, Tolzien only lasted about a first half, and then Flynn came in.
I mean, these guys at Barkley never played again. Vic never played again. This is just incomprehensible. It's an understatement to say something is wrong here. And if we think the negativity has been bad through game 13, you got two or three games left at two of the next three games at home. If you send your best customers home, trudging out of that stadium with disastrous performances, that's when changes really get made. You can't send your best customers home unhappy. It's a pretty good rule of thumb in business, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You own a retail store. Take care of your best customers. It's the guys trudging in and out, and the ladies too, trudging in and out of that stadium, watching this performance by these teams. If you're the ownership of that team, you look at this and you say, "What? I can't have this in front of my best customers. In front of the paying public, the guys who are paying, the people who are paying the freight." I know there's a lot of other fans out there, and they're calling from all over the world. And I'm not downgrading them in any way, please. I'm just saying it's your paying customers, your best customers. Man, they better give us two good performances in those home games. I don't care about the Detroit game. They better give us two good performances in those home games. That's where Mr. Mara, he learned that from his father. That's when he'll pay attention, and that's when this coaching, they better try to coax what they can out of this team. They get nothing out of this team. They get nothing. Now, look, let me say a couple of things. This is sound clear. I like Linville Joseph. He's done a good job, solidified the run. Yeah, vague generalities. Name me one big play Linville has made this year. Game-changing from the defensive tackle position. Fit in a scheme to stop the run? Yes. Yes. Has he taken advantage of the double teams on Jenkins? No. You know, keeps coming up on the stat sheet, four tackles on Sunday, disruptive in the middle of the line. Can you think of a single play, game-changing play? Now, long-term.
That's a good thought. And a good question.
Is that the guy you want to pay the big bucks to? I mean, he's not a game-changer. And I like the guy. Now, maybe if you do what you do. By the way, the management discussion, I couldn't call. I was so distraught yesterday, I couldn't call in. I did listen to the show last night at 6 o'clock. I played the replay. Great show, by the way, particularly your management talk about the future, deciding who we are. You know, Jerry and Tom, I mean, it's two different roles. There is a reason why we got two guys running this football team. You know, one guy day-to-day and one guy supposedly with the vision long-term. Jerry, and hopefully they can get on the same page and do what you were suggesting yesterday and did a little bit this morning too. It was a great management talk. That's exactly what has to happen, and I think that's the first question Mr. Mara is going to ask these guys. He's going to sit down with Jerry and he's going to say, "What's your vision, Jerry? What's your vision?" And Jerry better have a darn good answer, particularly if they lose two out of the last three or the two home games. Listen, Will Beatty gets no points with me for saying, I know I've played bad. That gets me no points in Will Beatty's favor. Listen, everybody's trying. Get it done, Will. Don't tell me you're not getting it done. Get it done. We can find a lot of people who are trying. There's 200 tackles out there who wish they could try too. Get it done, Will. Quit telling me you're trying. I don't want to hear it anymore. We got there with a four-man rush one time on Sunday. We got there with a five-man rush one time. We didn't get there with a two-man rush from inside the 10-yard line. We didn't get with a three-man rush on a third and 13. Perry, go after the guy. Even if it's some of the most uncreative pass rushes. I mean, this team, it's just straight ahead. There's no creativity in the pass rushes. Now, look, Lance, I'm rambling on. I'm frustrated like everybody else. The calls have been remarkably good and remarkably on point for 2 days now. You can tell people are, in a sense, resigned to what we've got here. It's just an awful performance. All I'm saying is, coaching staff, you better coax the best you can out of them in these next two home games, because there will be monumental changes. We know how the Mara family has operated over the years, and I'm sure Mr. Tisch is on board as well. Lance, thanks for tolerating me on this
No problem,
phone call.
Listen, I understand the frustration. Man. You take care. We'll hear from you a little bit later on this week. And listen, a lot of Giants fans echo the same sentiments that Len just showcased. Real quickly, talking about the defense and the lack of the pass rush in the San Diego game. You know, when I look back at that Chargers game, I saw a lot of secondary players, and I brought this up, I believe, the other day, playing about 5 or 6 yards behind the sticks. And, you know, if you're trying to be an aggressive defense and you're trying to fluster Phillip Rivers, the guy's got to get on the line and start challenging players. And that was not evident against San Diego. And as far as Len saying, the Mara family, the Tisch family getting irritated, you know, they have a track record of making changes when things don't happen over the course of a season or two. So you can bet on the fact that they will be very aggressive this offseason. They will look back and see what broke down this year and what do they have to do to make things right. Because Jerry Reese, if you recall, training camp, the first statement, it wasn't about, hey, the Giants won 2 Super Bowls recently. It wasn't about, hey, we're very happy with the offseason moves we made. No, it was about the fact that the Giants have missed the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years. That was the first thing that was emphasized before they even got to the speculation, before they got to the projected numbers. Playoffs, 3 of the last 4 years weren't even in the mix. Okay, now it's 4 of the last 5. That's got to be one factor to give you some momentum in the offseason. And as far as the last 3 games are concerned, there are plenty of guys, forget the coaching staff, that are on 1-year contracts. There are plenty of guys that are having their contracts expire. This is a show-me 3-game stretch. This is a 3-game stretch where you separate the men from the boys. Who wants to stay a part of this team? Who wants to get paid? Who wants to move on? It's a show-me stretch. You've got guys that you could potentially use the franchise tag on. You have guys that are due for extensions. You have guys that are due for big contracts. Go out there and show me. That's at least how I view these last 3 games, and I'm sure the organization, the coaching staff, front office is viewing it the same way. The evaluation process begins Sunday against Seattle. An opportunity for players and coaches to make some statements. Let's try to squeeze in a few more callers before we wrap things up. We go to Chan in Philly. Chan, what's happening?
Nothing much. How you doing?
Doing very well, Chan. What you got? What's on your mind?
So I just want to say about the Stevie Brown thing. I wouldn't mind if we, like, I love Stevie Brown, but I wouldn't mind if we didn't bring him back. I think Will Hill is great. Like, I think he could take the starting spot next year if Stevie Brown doesn't come back, but I would love it either way.
Well, I don't think Stevie Brown is going to cost you to really break open the piggy bank. I think from a personnel standpoint, if they have the space, if he shows them, rather, that he's healthy, it never hurts to have depth. Because if there was one thing that was evident this season, Chan, not necessarily in the safety spot, but in the secondary, they've had their fair share of injuries. So if you have an extra guy that can, remember, not just play the safety spot, Stevie Brown can contribute on special teams. If the money's right, I don't think there's any harm in bringing him back.
Yeah, that's right. And earlier in the season, John was giving Will Hill, like, not even room to breathe about how he's not a good player and all that, and I had to bust his balls on Twitter.
What are you talking about? John Schmelk was giving Will Hill a hard time, you're saying?
Yeah, at the beginning of the season, he was like, Will Hill can't play, he didn't show anything and all that stuff, and I had to hit him on Twitter and say, hey, Will Hill's great, and Will Hill showed it, and I want to give Will Hill props for that.
Well, listen, I don't remember any tweets, but if there's any time I could throw John Schmelk under the bus, I'm not going to necessarily hesitate in doing that. So I'll take your word for it, Chan, and I will make sure to pass the message along after the show. But Will Hill, as you mentioned, has been a big bright spot on this defense. He's a guy that was suspended at the beginning of the year, came back in, knew the defense, fit very well. And Len brought up Linville Joseph not necessarily making game-changing plays. Well, you could point to a handful of game-changing plays that Will Hill has provided. So that's a guy that has embraced his opportunity and taken full advantage.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I listen to the show every day, and finally got the call.
Well, glad to have you involved, Chan. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. 201-939-4513. Okay, well, this show is never complete until we hear from this guy. See, he said he was going to take some time off, but I didn't believe him. And now he's on Twitter, by the way, which makes the interaction even that much more exciting. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening? Steve, are you there? Steve, unbelievable. Man of very few words now. All right, hopefully we'll hear from Steve sometime before we wrap up the show. Let's try Keith in Florida. Keith, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well,
thanks,
Keith.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. What you got?
You were so on point with the consistency factor. You know, having two Super Bowls, it buys goodwill, and it makes it hard to make changes, I guess, from the management standpoint, because, you know, we're never consistent, but we got two rings. And a lot of people don't have rings. You can't really discount them too much. So it buys a lot of goodwill for a team that's really inconsistent, and I don't know how you handle it. I guess next year is probably the last year of the regime, you know, and things will probably change, but it's really been frustrating. I mean, it comes down to, like, would you rather be 12-4 and not have a ring, or, you know, a bunch of inconsistent seasons and have two rings? I guess you want the rings, but at the same time, it's been really hard to watch, you know. One thing, you guys were talking about Brady and some of the other quarterbacks. The guy I think about gets pounded a lot and doesn't make the mistakes he like gets is Big Ben. You know, I mean, he's a little bit more mobile, but he's a guy that doesn't really make those kind of mistakes. Eli kind of looks like, you know, he kind of gets under pressure and he sort of closes his eyes and wins it. And, you know, that's got to stop. You know, hopefully next year he comes back strong. I don't know what we're going to do with the wide receiver position. If Nick's going to stay, I'm tending to think he shouldn't stay. But I'm going to let you talk about that. The other thing is that I got to tell you, the worst part of the season was the trash talking before the Cowboys game and losing. And that was something that really bothered me from a professionalism level, from the Giants, you know, from a Giant level, at what we stand for and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. I took that really, really badly. I thought that was terrible, and I thought that was something probably the low point of my season in terms of Giants, plus losing to the Cowboys. You know, the only consolation we have this year is that the Cowboys got their butts kicked yesterday. But anyway, you know, hopefully – I don't know. I just don't have the answers because, like, we're split in this sort of paradox with, you know, winning two championships but never being consistent. What are we going to do now? So I'll let you, talk on that, and I'll listen. But thanks a lot for the call.
You got it, Keith, and thanks so much for weighing in. Greatly appreciate the phone call this morning. And I think Keith touched on a number of good points, and the answers are not easy. And a lot of you who have called up trying to find the answers, but, you know, until the offseason starts, we really won't know what the game plan is. But change is coming. Change needs to come. When a team underperforms year in and year out, you need to go back to the drawing board and make tweaks. You can't just say, we're going to bring back the same nucleus and all of a sudden things are going to drastically change. So you can guarantee that there will be change. It's just how much change. Do you really revamp things? Once again, I'm going to use the term transformation, transformative offseason. Not a rebuilding offseason, transformative offseason, where you bring back, but you also make some heavy changes to the infrastructure, the core. You can't just say, well, this core got us two Super Bowls, so we just keep them around, bring them back, and expect them to turn things around. No, you got to fine-tune that core. That's what I think it has gotten to the point of. So that is something that they're going to start addressing in the next three games, the evaluation period, as I mentioned. Look at what you have. Look at the desire you see out of these guys in the final three games. You can truly tell how much a player has in him when he's going out there and knows that he's not getting in the playoffs. This is a great time to really step back and say, okay, who's going out there and earning his paycheck? Who's hungry to play football? And who realizes vacation has already started? And then you can determine, who do we want to invest? Keith just brought up Akeem Nicks, and Akeem Nicks is going to be one of the decisions they're going to have to make. He's going to be a free agent. And maybe the contract has been something that's been weighing on his mind throughout the course of this season. That's pure speculation. Injuries is another factor. But Akeem Nicks hasn't necessarily been putting up monster numbers. If you're the Giants, do you throw the bank at him? I don't know. Maybe you consider giving him the franchise tag. But remember, the franchise tag is the average of the top five salaries at that position in the NFL. Do you want to lock that type of money up for just 1 year? For a guy that has not put up consistent numbers the last two seasons. And that could very well interfere in the financial flexibility that they'll have in targeting other players. So that's a very critical decision that they're going to have to make. And Keith talked about how the disappointment to that Cowboys performance, because they did a lot of talking, which is out of character for this team. And I believe Len also touched on this. And that was a big surprising development. But another thing that I remember from that Cowboys game, Akeem Nicks didn't suit up for that game. And yes, there were injury factors, there were other factors, but you know, this is a sign where you've got everything on the line in that game. You know, this is going to determine what you can play for moving forward. That's not when you keep your cards off the table. So that's a big disappointment that you could walk away from that Cowboys game. And you got to wonder, is that going to weigh in when the Giants think about who they should pay and who they shouldn't? Well, let's try to squeeze in another call before we wrap things up, and I've already built this caller up. We didn't hear from him the last time that we tossed to him, so hopefully Steve from D.C. can redeem himself. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm here. I actually was planning on taking off a couple of days. I know a couple of people might be happy to hear that, but unfortunately we got some snow, so I'm home with my babies, about to go out and build a snowman. But, you know, I definitely feel Len's pain and his sentiments on everything he said. And, you know, Keith, I tell you, you know, I saw an interview, you know, just, you know, the whole year has been a disappointment. I always kind of felt like we didn't have the discipline that a Tom Coughlin coach usually has. I just kind of felt like he just got a little bit, perhaps maybe too lax on the players, you know. Even with Hakeem interviewing with his sunglasses and headphones on, I was just taken back. I don't even know what happened to the dress code. So, you know, there definitely needs to be some changes. But, you know, I can recall a couple times last year, you know, when John about, you know, we always, you know, it just seems like the offense plays scared. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're constantly just throwing the long ball. You know, and I always kind of brought up, you know, in the same, you know, sense with as far as how it was, you know, keeping our defense on the field and not giving us time to rest. But, you know, it just kind of looks like, you know, to me it's almost like we're built like we really don't want to play. We just want to score touchdowns and get off of the field. I very disappointed with the offense, you know, this year, and I just really would like to see us find a way to keep Hakeem here for another year, even though I'm very disappointed in his play. But to me, I just think that it's just too many unknowns with the offense, and quite frankly, I don't think we need any more receivers here. So if we could keep his numbers down, you know, really probably just, I guess, probably end up franchising him, because I don't really want to do a long-term given what he's done the last couple of years. But I just don't really feel like we really need to do a lot as far as the receivers, but clearly the players are just not performing to their capabilities, and that's coaching. You know, that's coaching all the way. I mean, I think most Giants fans can agree we felt like we had a good roster coming into this year, and for me, the last 10 to 12 years, I felt like we've had a roster that could go deep into the playoffs. So I'm just wondering, you know, in your opinion, do you think we'll see some coaching changes here? Because It to me, it's more about attitude as opposed to play. I just feel like we have the talent, you know, for whatever reasons. We, you know, obviously it's been more about the offense than the defense. So with that being said, you know, as far as the defense is concerned, I love to see Stevie Brown, you know, come back. But, you know, like I was saying, for a year and a half, I mean, I'm admitted I'm a, you know, Gator alumni, but Will Hill is definitely, you know, a great, you know, piece to have in place. You know, and I'm happy with John Beeson, but I feel like a lot of people are just a little bit too in love with John Beeson right now. I don't really want to see us break the bank with John Beeson at all. I just think it's too much risk.
And I don't mean to cut you off, Steve. I agree with you. I think Beeson gets put up on a pedestal somewhat, and deservingly so, because he has been a game changer. But because the time he came, the defense started to play better. But you can't overlook the fact that Will Hill, who you just touched on, is another big reason why the defense played so well as some other guys who have stepped up. It's not just Beeson, but the timing in which Beeson arrived tends to bring him a little bit more credit than the others.
Yeah, and he has a lot to prove, too. So, I'm cautious when the guys have a lot to prove and, it's, you know, they're up for a contract. But, you know, not only that, but I have some real concerns about the linebacker position, period. You know, I've made no qualms. I think Juwan Williams needs to go. I mean, I just think he needs to go, just like I feel like Myers needs to go. These are just two guys that just don't fit the mold to me. You know, they're just not doing what their job is supposed to be doing. And I know one last thing I want to say, because I always got a lot to say, is I heard there's some rumors about a tight end, I think, out of Minnesota.
Kyle Rudolph.
Being a free agent.
Well,
yeah.
I have to look up to see whether or not he's a free agent, to be honest with you. I did see some speculation on Twitter, but I wanted to confirm, because off the top of my head, you're saying you read about him being a free agent? Let's just double check.
Yes, I would love to have that guy.
bringing up the contract right now. Kyle Rudolph is a free agent in 2015, so the only way to acquire him would be via trade. You can't sign him.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, one last thing is, you know, we got to shorten up the steps for Eli. I just don't, you know, I mean, his confidence wasn't there. The offensive line wasn't playing well. But, I mean, to me, that's up to the offensive coordinator. That should have been corrected because it was hurting us that bad. You know, I mean, everybody's talking about Peyton's offense and, you know, and kid out in San Diego, I can't even think of his name right now, but, you know, we should have been going to a five-step drop and letting Eli get rid of the ball as opposed to just keep throwing it downfield. I don't even want to go on because that really hurt. It really, really hurt because, like I said, you know, the screen pass, I mean, that's on the quarterback. He should be able to throw, you know, we should be able to run a screen play, you know, effectively. So I'd like to see us get back to a more, you know, smash-mouth running game and show up our defense, but we definitely need to make some changes on that linebacker position. Listen, you know, great show, guys, and I'll certainly be checking you out on Twitter, Lance. And,
I hope so,
you know.
Steve. I plan to hear from you. And this is the other thing. I think you need to get in contact with Nix's camp because he's going to be a free agent. He could use an extra representative, Steve. Don't shy away from
listen.
That.
Listen. I can't help him now. Like I said, he kind of lost me with his interview. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, guys. I am not sold on his play. The only reason I keep bringing his name up is because everybody else just kind of keeps bashing him. But don't there be any doubt about it. He is definitely underperformed. But so has Cruz. You know, I mean, Cruz hasn't scored since week 4 or 5. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. And for us to sit there and bash this man, I mean, he has a lot of pressure. I don't think he's 100%. But he's always been one to attack the ball. I just don't really feel like he got good balls thrown to him this year. I watched him closely, and I just felt like it's been more on Eli. You know, no one has been catching passes in stride this year. And we need a short tight end, and we need to just tighten up that offense. But, no, I mean, I can't help Nick. He's on his own with this.
All right, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. Good hearing
all
from
right.
you. Take care. And I hope that Steve is okay now because Drew earlier in the show tried to patch things up. There's no bad blood between Giants fans. Everybody's on the same page. Nobody's looking out to get Steve from D.C. We know he's passionate. We know he supports Akiem Nix fully, and time will tell whether or not some of his moves will come to fruition. In, though, Victor Cruz's defense, that last point that Steve brought up, Victor Cruz has been seeing a lot more double teams than Akiem Nix has been this season. So to say that Victor Cruz is underperformed, that's fair. Based on the numbers that he's put up the last 2 years, yes, the numbers are down, but let's face it, the offensive numbers are down across the board. But Akiem Nix is not seeing nearly as many double teams as Victor Cruz is seeing. So it's one thing to say Victor Cruz's numbers are down, and you at least have a valid enough reason. Okay, Eli Manning can't find Victor Cruz down the field 99% of the time because he's got two guys right in his face, whereas Akiem Nix has had some favorable one-on-one matchups, and he hasn't necessarily been taking advantage of that. Part of that is hasn't had a lot of great balls thrown his way. I buy that. But the other part of it was he could have made some plays in the past. Maybe not necessarily the San Diego game because Manning seemed to throw behind just about everybody. But there were games earlier this season where Manning would throw to him 10 times and he would get 2 receptions out of that. So that is something that they're going to have to fine-tune and tweak moving forward to get this offense clearly back on the same page. Really appreciate all the phone calls, all the interaction on Twitter. I know I didn't get to address a great deal of chatter on Twitter. I'll try to do that once we wrap up the show. I know a lot of you have some questions that you have posed about some of the offseason moves that the Giants could make and what type of free agents they may be looking for. So I will certainly try to get back to you on that front. Did not get to get into the Seattle Seahawks as much as I would have liked. We will start focusing on them Wednesday moving forward. But I'll leave you with this regarding the Seahawks. And I know a lot of you Giants fans, mathematics may not work out, but I know you're still into these games. And you should, because as I mentioned, this is a show-me 3-game stretch. They may not have nothing to play for, but individuals, coaches have a lot to play for. So don't overlook that fact. Seattle has the number one defense in the NFL. Seattle's coming off a loss, which is never a good thing. It's a heartbreaking loss to the Niners. And those were very tough battles, and they lost on a last-second field goal that Phil Dawson was able to come through from 22 yards out. Don't buy into the whole cross-country factor anymore because Seattle's actually performed quite well when they've come to the East Coast in the middle of the country. So I wouldn't put necessarily too much stock. But this is a very balanced offense. They know how to run the ball, and Russell Wilson has not had a sophomore slump. He has come a long way. and these receivers have developed little by little. They don't necessarily put up huge numbers, but he spreads the wealth. And Percy Harvin's status is up in the air. I know that Pete Carroll is going to address that over the next coming days. They had shut him down because of the hip injury. He's another guy that adds a new dimension, not just on offense, but on special teams. So big challenge coming up for the New York Giants, not just to solve their defense, but to also slow down a very balanced offense, which San Diego showed. Now you get a big challenge in Seattle, and they also have a dynamic special teams unit as well. So the focus will shift towards the Seahawks starting on Wednesday. We'll also continue to talk about what should be a busy offseason for the New York Giants. Thanks to all the listeners and the callers. Lance Meadows signing off here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live back with you on Wednesday, 9:30, same time. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino with you the next 2 days. John Schmelk and I back on Friday. We'll also be doing Big Blue Hits that day a little bit later in the day. Have a good one.